Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Dominic Salvia. Mike Crute remains on vacation. I'm sure today he's putting on some lotion for the sunburn, has his toes in the sand. Enjoy your time off, Mike. Thank you for joining us here at the Devil's Advocates. Have our friend Joe Zepecki from Zepecki Communications in studio with me as the co-devil, the friend of the devil. Joe, thanks for coming around.
What's going on, man? Coach Devil, right?
Coach.
Yeah.
Vegas Joe Devil.
Hey, I don't know if this makes a difference. I can hear you great.
There we go.
I can't hear anything in my ears.
Well, I got to turn the headphones up. There we go.
Back.
All right, we're getting there.
Yeah, we got a few gremlins in the machines today.
Well,
we're
working got both it out. Of us together in studio. We made the drive out here together. Man, we're getting a full load of Joe, and I'm going to share him with you guys today.
I just want anybody else who appears on this show to know that the new protocol is if you are guest hosting, they send a driver and a car directly to your front door. They bring you in VIP parking, second spot in the lot.
See?
You set a new precedent, and I expect every future guest devil to be treated just as well as I have.
High expectations, Joe. Wait till after the show when the drinks flow. You'll enjoy it even more. Joe Zepecki, Zepecki Communications, you've been a friend for a long time, but some folks, as we continue to grow the Civic Media Network, may not be aware of your background, so I want to do a quick little rundown. What brought you into the studio with me here today, Joe? What's your history? What's your expertise?
Well, a long time ago, my mom and my dad met each other at a local
and
tavern.
Fell in love, and then the birds and the
here
bees.
Here we are. I was one of those kids who was always fascinated by American history and by politics and by leadership. And so, like, the summer before my freshman year of high school, I spent that summer, you know, as all high schoolers do, volunteering on a local congressional campaign.
What?
Yeah. So I've been doing this for a while.
Wow, man.
I would say the brief highlights. Was fortunate enough to serve in the Obama administration in Washington, D.C. I worked on President Obama's reelect. I have worked on campaigns for the United States Senate and for governor. It's been a heck of a ride. And no regrets, man.
No regrets. No regrets. Joe, that brings us to now. Joe Zepecki, Zepecki Communications. You're kind of still in this environment, this field, in politics and communications. What's your main focus right now?
I was referred to today by a friend who shall remain nameless. He was connecting me with a new communications staffer who's coming to the great state of Wisconsin for one of the campaigns that's upcoming. Was referred to as a talking head. I'm not sure how I feel about that. I'm often asked to comment on goings on in the news. I'm really fortunate enough to work on things I believe in, right? Yep. Working to defend the Affordable Care Act, one of, I think, the most important legacies of former President Obama. And obviously, healthcare is still a critical issue for families and individuals and seniors today. Some exciting new work around the transition to renewable energy, not just here in Wisconsin, but across the country, you know, making sure that as we transition the grid in the years ahead from fossil fuels to renewable energies, that the jobs that are created and required to do that go to union workers who, you know, are going to do a good job, are going to spend that money back into local economies, really maximize the economic opportunity inherent in this generational opportunity that we have to go from a fossil fuel based, you know, system of energy.
That's a nice way to look at it, as an opportunity versus, you know, certain death.
Well, it's but within whether it's a choice or a need, a nice to do or a must do. I think the point is there's economic opportunity here.
Certainly.
And when we look at some of the challenges the economy is facing, some of the great things that are happening around, like returning manufacturing to the United States, we got to look for growth industries. Renewable energy is a growth industry where these are high-skilled jobs, right? Whether you're putting a wind turbine, you know, into the ocean floor or making it float offshore, or you're climbing up to fix a wind turbine, you know, that's sitting in a cornfield, or you're, you know, making room for solar panels. These are high-tech, these are high-skilled jobs.
Yeah.
And you can't hire any schmo off the street to do them. And you don't want to, you know, underpay and undervalue the work. If we do this right, it's an incredible legacy for this country. It'll do a lot to mitigate the harmful effects of climate change. And so if we have to do it anyways, why not make sure we maximize the economic impact as we do it? So,
and as a country, we've dedicated some money, Inflation Reduction Act, you know, billions and billions of dollars to help with this transition.
Exactly. And that's like, so the worst case scenario and the way that this has gone for a number of years, right, is like, let's say you want to put up a solar farm or a wind farm. You know, you've got basically, you know, teams of workers that will start in North Carolina. And they'll do a project, and then they'll go to Tennessee, and then they'll go up to Illinois.
Just bounce around, right.
Bounce around, and the challenge there is those folks are sending the money back home to get spent, which means the local economies aren't benefiting from it. So like here in Wisconsin, when you think about when We Energies or MG&E or Alliant, if they stand up a new solar field, ultimately the cost of that is passed on to ratepayers. And so under the Inflation Reduction Act, you can get a better deal for the utility, which means a better deal for ratepayers, if you pay a prevailing wage, if you, as part of that project, have enough apprentices on site.
Oh, really?
Because it's not just about, hey, let's get this one job done. Let's build pathways to careers for skilled tradesmen and women. And so it's exciting stuff. It's important stuff. And, you know, Keeps me around and engaged on stuff.
Well, it's great to be in something that you're passionate and knowledgeable about, you know, and there's always something more to learn. But to be able to be advising and be in these industries is something you really care about is a great spot to be in, Joe. So congratulations on that. Love it. Love to hear a good story like that. As we were talking earlier about catching up, what you've been doing, this healthcare issue, and I've come along on healthcare, Joe. If you don't know, and Mike Crute brought me along to a large degree. You know, a lot of people, and his family included, he couldn't get healthcare. He had a child with pre-existing conditions. Well, of course, as a lot of things, if you're not aware of situations or you haven't personally gone through them, it's easy to, you know, bring your own thoughts to a process and not consider other things. All of a sudden, I was presented with my one of my best friends. All of a sudden, can't insure his kid.
Yeah.
Well, what do you mean he can't insure his kid? You know what I mean?
Yeah, because the health insurance company can't make money off of him.
Right. And so that you know, was of course a terrible situation. And Crudy worked you know, politically to advocate for changes here in the state of Wisconsin. Something very proud of him, and he was successful in doing so. So I've evolved on this issue, and I've come to the point to now with Bernie Sanders, you know, Medicare for all. And we got 35 industrial countries in this world, and we're the only one that can't quite figure it out, Joe. But even goes down to here in the state of Wisconsin, as we've talked about over the years, as you worked on, right? You were with the Obama administration when the Affordable Care Act passed.
I was, and that will be later this month. March 23rd is the Affordable Care Act's birthday. The landmark legislation known as Obamacare becomes a teenager, 13 years young, on March 23rd. And yeah, and it did all kinds of things, right? It was consumer protections. You can't be denied health insurance because of a pre-existing condition. It established the Obamacare marketplace or exchanges, where if you don't have employer coverage, you can purchase coverage through the marketplace in a more competitive environment that leads to better outcomes, better packages, better rates, et cetera. And it offered states an opportunity to expand their Medicaid programs. Here in Wisconsin, we call ours Badger Care. And so in the last 13 years, 40 states, including one just last week, have expanded Medicaid. Wisconsin has not, because Wisconsin Republicans every single 2 years have said, nope, we're not going to do it. Nope, we don't care that we could cover more people for fewer dollars, that we could save the state hundreds of billions of dollars, like
literally
a ton of money.
And can we go, go back and capture the money that we didn't get?
You can't.
You cannot.
That's gone.
So every day is gone. Every day that we don't get it, we can't go back and get it.
If they did it right now, they would get a 95% match or, you know, like subsidy from the federal government. Hey, our tax dollars are going to Washington anyways. Right now, we're just subsidizing healthcare for people in Illinois and Florida and California because our state refuses to do the right thing and expand Medicaid. I'm the eternal optimist. It's never too late to do the right thing. Maybe the North Carolina Republicans working with the Democratic governor.
I mean, North Carolina, man. What?
Listen, Wisconsin Republicans have followed their North Carolina Republican friends in the past. They got the move, the lame duck move, to strip the incoming governor of powers before they took office. Right. The Wisconsin Republicans copied that move from North Carolina. Yes. Maybe they can copy this move, too. That would be great.
Joe Zepecki, the conservatives, the Republicans, complain or very concerned, apparently, about the 90% reimbursement rate. And now, thanks to recent legislation, up to 95% reimbursement for a couple of years for the states that have not yet signed in. So we could get more.
Yeah.
Robin Voss, Republicans, we can get more. We can cover more people. But my understanding of the complaint at the time was that, well, what if the federal government...
what if they change their mind?
If they change their mind and decide not to pay it, it's what happens then?
Well, we're 13 years in, and the federal government is still living up to its commitments. Yeah, I mean, listen, it was a straw man, ridiculous argument. You could create that kind of straw man hypothetical around any issue, and if you did, you would just be paralyzed and you'd never get out of bed in the morning, right? If I get out of bed and the floor of my house disintegrates, I'll fall through. I better stay in bed all day. I mean, that's like, what are we doing here?
What are we doing here? That is Joe Zepecki. He's from Zepecki Communications. He is a friend of the Devil's Advocates, and he's going to be sticking around with me all day today. Look forward to more conversation. You can join us on the phones as well, 844-967-2789. Joe, we're going to head to a break in about a minute. But what needs to happen here in the state of Wisconsin, in your opinion, for the Republicans to step up and accept this?
They got to hear from we the people. If you care about this, if you care about access to health care, call your Republican legislator. Tell them it's never too late to do the right thing. We can still expand Medicaid in Wisconsin. Governor Evers has put it in his budget proposal. The Joint Finance Committee, when it meets in the next couple of months, they can include it in the state budget, and we are off to the races.
There's a budget proposal coming up for Republicans, and Governor Evers is going to have some work to do. Come back with us, 844-967-2789.
Big and tall of political talk, the Devil's Advocates.
I went home with a waitress.
Radio show, you can always join us on the phones at 844-967-2789. Joe Zepecki, Zepecki Communications, the friend of the devil here with me today up until 6 o'clock, talking some local backyard politics. Joe, before the break, talking about expanding Medicaid here in the state of Wisconsin. I'm down for Medicare for All. Let me just ask you, we talked about Medicare for All in the last segment. I just don't understand the sense of dread that Republicans, if they truly believe this, because if you think about, you know, the elder Medicare, right, millions and millions of people on government insurance, right, mm-hmm. Medicaid for those that are poor, those who are disabled, those, you know, we have insurance, we do that for our federal workers, for our armed forces, right, for state workers, in municipality, like. There are probably a third of the people in this country right now are on some form of quote unquote government backed supported.
You mean healthcare. They're on that socialism?
They're on that socialism. So what is the problem? I mean, literally, I don't I get. Is it purely the money? In your opinion, I mean, you understand this industry perhaps better than I do. Is it always the money, Joe?
I listen. You know me. I like to try to put myself in the shoes of other people. I take many Republicans at their word that they are concerned about, you know, the role of government versus the private sector. Reasonable Republicans, and they still are out there, are allowed to believe that there are things that the private sector can do better than government. And you know what? They're right sometimes. There are some things that the private sector can and should do better than government, right? My point is my point has always been government can't do everything, but the things that it needs to do, it should do well.
Like perhaps provide for the general welfare of its citizens, right, as I read in some document at one point.
And that's where there becomes a tension, right? Is like if you have Republicans, conservatives who are saying this isn't the role of government at all, and you have Democrats saying, well, like, okay, but fine, we're in this business now, so we have to do it as well as we possibly can. There's tension there. And what happens is sometimes when Republicans are in control, they're going to, you know, defund things and have less money, and then it's harder to do things well. Listen, this is part of the ebb and flow and the give and take. I think the reality of where we are right now is that, and just today, actually, the Washington Post had an editorial. After 13 years, it's time for Republicans in Congress to give up the ghost, stop trying to dismantle the Affordable Care Act. Right? Okay, they took their shot.
Repeal and replace.
It didn't work. They voted over 50 times to try and do it. They couldn't get it done. We're on our third president since this became the law of the land. Both parties have controlled both chambers of Congress during that time span. And it hasn't happened.
But they're never going to stop. Talking about cutting Medicare and Social Security, man. What makes you think they're going to stop at trying to cut something that was just created 13 years ago versus stuff that's been around for a generation?
Well, listen, for a while, when programs like Medicaid and Social Security started,
they were fighting over it.
But
they still are.
But the fights change in tone and tenor over times, right? Like, we're talking about,
to my understanding, Joe, they're willing to bankrupt this country on the debt ceiling fight if they don't get what they want on Medicare and Medicaid.
They're not
going
to do that.
Well, that's what they're projecting.
They're threatening to do that. Yes. They're refusing to put their
plan on
the table.
But if they're
going to
threaten to do it, wouldn't you take them at their word, Joe?
I mean, should we negotiate with hostage takers at all?
Well, hell no.
I thought it was the policy of the United States that we don't negotiate with terrorists.
Well, what about you talk about the private sector versus that. You know, one of the factors in private sector is economies of scale, you know, yep, those that can buy. Well, obviously, we as citizens of this country and through our healthcare coverage, buy a lot of pharmaceuticals, man. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And now, and Republicans in some places have an issue with what? We as a country negotiating for the price of pharmaceuticals?
Isn't
that very capitalistic thing to do?
It should be. And well, we'll come back to that. But yes, so to just put a fine point on it, in the Inflation Reduction Act, which passed only with Democratic votes, not a single member of Congress who was a Republican voted for
Shameful.
It. Medicare is finally allowed to use their bulk purchasing power to negotiate for lower drug prices. It's not all the drugs. It's not immediately. It phases in, but it's progress. And that's the point, is we have to sort of bend the arc towards progress. It's an interesting, you talked about capitalism.
Yeah.
How would you describe yourself these days? Because where I'm like honing in on is like, I'm a competitive markets capitalist. And what I'm right, because the competitive markets of that has to do a lot of work.
Sure.
Because, you know, there's those who would tell you that capitalism ultimately ends with monopolies in every single, you know,
circumstance.
Vertical.
Right.
Yeah. And that's not good. That's not the outcome we want. And so if you're talking about a competitive marketplace, how do you ensure that there's competition? How do you ensure? Well, somebody's got to get involved and say, these are the rules of the road. This is what you can do. This is what you can't do. And so, listen, it is the role of government to step in from time to time and say things like, hey, insurance companies, you have been gouging people who need insulin to survive decades.
That's just a really high demanded product.
Right. And it costs them like 78 cents to produce a vial, and they're charging like $300 for it. And so it's the role of the government to step in and say, like, this is out of control. Let's cap the cost of insulin, what people can pay out of pocket, at $35 a month. Now, in my view and the view of Democrats in Congress and the White House, that should go for all Americans. Right now, it only goes for seniors on Medicare. It could go for every diabetic in this country if Congress acts. Democrats want to, Republicans don't.
The Republicans are down with socializing the losses, right? And privatizing the profits. And the insurance right. companies, when you take a third of the people that are involved in some sort of federal government or state government health care, well, those are the riskiest, right? The ones that are going to use the system the most. Because, you know, 20, 30-year-old somethings generally aren't right. in the healthcare system a whole lot. And that's exactly who the healthcare insurance companies want to cover. They don't want to cover the old or the sick or those out on, you know, fighting wars for this country. Amazing how that works. Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. That's Joe Zepecki. Come back with us. 844-967-2789. To the Devil's Advocates radio show. You can join us on the lines 844-967-2789. Joe Zepecki, Coach Joe. He's sticking around for the day. Joe, nice talk with you, man. I want to stay on this health care, these benefits. We briefly mentioned Social Security, Medicare. Right now, as mentioned, obviously a big fight right now going on. The Republicans, oh, they got to do something. And the White House say, no, that we're not going to negotiate on this. These are commitments. This is not going to be in the budget. We want to talk about it, want to address it, fine. But you're not going to force our hand on this right now. Number one, from a negotiating tactic, Joe, do you agree with the Biden administration?
What I will say is I think the Biden administration has played this masterfully, right? Because you had Senator Rick Scott, Republican from Florida, who put out a plan, the closest thing to a policy, you know, platform that the Republican Party has had in years.
I saw the trifold.
Right. And it said every 5 years, every federal program up for an up or down vote to get reauthorized. Guess what's a federal program? Social Security. So is Medicare. So what they're saying is, every 5 years, they would put that entire program on the chopping block, and it would need, you know, the votes of Congress to go forward, right? So Biden brings this up.
Which, of course, is asinine. You can't possibly do it. If you think about, you know, budgeting for your future, some dollars need to be relied on. Otherwise, what? I have a great plan, but if Senator Ron Johnson decides not to go forward with this, then I'm going to be what, out in the streets?
And I thought markets and conservatives like certainty.
Yes, they do.
So at the State of the Union, Biden brings this up. And he basically, in real time, gets Republicans in Congress to be like, no, we're not going to touch Medicare or Social Security. And Scott comes out and he announces in his plan, every program except for Social Security and Medicare is what I actually meant to say. See, what happened was. Right? But now, kudos to Biden and Democrats who are staying on the offensive. Because now the big picture demands that Republicans are making without putting an actual plan on the table.
Zero plan.
They're saying, well, we're not talking about Social Security. We're not talking about Medicare. And we're not talking about defense. If you take those three parts of the budget right. and say they're off limits, but we're going to get our debt under control. We're going to balance the budget. Now you're talking about deep, like 70% or more cuts to everything else the government
does. Because there's really literally nothing left to take from.
Because those three programs
are so huge.
So Affordable Care Act, 70% cut. Medicaid, 70% cut. And then it's like now we have Republicans maybe putting into action the self-defeating prophecy that Robin Voss and Wisconsin Republicans have been so worried about when it comes to Medicaid expansion. It's like the federal government should live up to its commitments. And we know that there are some pretty common sense things that could be done.
Well, hang on, the Republicans
to extend these programs.
They're down with, like, you know, all the government's. We're from the government. We want to be in the government. The government's terrible. We're going to make sure that right. it's broken. I mean, they could literally do things to shore these up. If they wanted to engage in actual governance.
Yep.
But my impression is, Joe, that they do not.
Well, I think some of them do. I would like it to be more of them, right? So what are some of those pretty straightforward things that could be done?
Lift the cap.
Exactly. So right now, the cap on Social Security taxes is at $160,000 of income. So that means if you make $159,999 per year, every single dollar you make a portion of it goes into Social Security to pay for current retirees.
The Ponzi scheme, as Senator Ron Johnson has
if
called it.
If you make $200,000 a year, that last $40,000 that you made over 160, not a single cent goes into the Social Security.
And every dollar beyond that to infinity.
Correct. So lift the cap, and you have extended the lifespan of this program. Is there a worker shortage or a shortage of good-paying jobs in this country? I don't know, but what I do know is that legal immigration to this country is at its lowest point in decades, and businesses are saying we need more workers. Okay, you want more workers? We're not cloning humans yet, so we need to figure out our immigration system, increase immigration. We've increased the number of workers, the number of wages being paid, the number of people paying into Social Security. Now we've extended the lifespan of the program again.
Well, not only that, you can also solve and address finally, perhaps in a bipartisan manner, the immigration problems that we have.
Exactly.
I mean, some of the Biden administration and Republicans went to the border. There is some conversations going on because these are legitimate, real issues that need to be addressed with the government, because individuals, we cannot address these things.
Correct. Yeah. And like, it was sort of interesting. Paul Ryan did some former House Speaker, Wisconsin, former Congressman, 2012 vice presidential nominee on the Republican Party.
So long ago.
Was happy to be a part of the team that defeated him. Swore up and down that he had, in a recent appearance, that he had the votes to get comprehensive immigration reform done. And Donald Trump chickened out at like the 11th hour and put out a tweet, and then a bunch of MAGA Congress people, you know, said, "Oh, nope, I can't do it. Not going to vote for it." And he had to pull the bill. And it's like, really? What are we supposed to take away from this? Well, I'm going to take away Donald Trump is bad news, because we need comprehensive immigration reform in this country, right?
Right.
And he torpedoed it because he would rather have the issue to run on and to outrage people over than actually do anything to address the problem.
Joe Zepecki, my guest right now. He is from Zepecki Communications. You can join us at 844-967-2789. Joanne from Madison, you're up. Welcome, Joanne. What do you got for us?
Yes, I'm thinking of the term Obamacare. Originally, the conservatives created it, and they meant it as a pejorative, negative criticism of Obamacare, of the ACA. And Obama embraced it. And I remember the beautiful moment in which he said, yes, Obama cares. And I'm wondering, here's a question. Can we do that with the word entitlement? I mean, I am freaking entitled to Social Security. I'm over 60, and I'm entitled. And we should embrace it as Democrats, as proud Democrats, that we're entitled to what we earn. So, again, thanks so much. Great talk.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it. Yeah, terms do matter. You know, progressive liberals. Yeah, Obamacare. Just own it. Hang on to it. Yes, Obamacare, whatever. Whatever you want to call it to give people some coverage, whatever you want to call it to allow those that may have a pre-existing condition to get some health insurance, call it what you want. Let's just sign it and get it done.
It's an earned benefit, right? I mean, that's what we call a pension in this country. It's an earned benefit where if out of your paycheck, you're putting aside money for your
right.
future.
Social Security, sure. Yeah.
Right. So Social Security, Medicare, it's an earned benefit. You've been working your whole life. You it's got to be there for you. You've earned it, period. And so to me, my advice would be take that ENT word just out of the lexicon entirely. Why use it? That's how the right frames it. Social Security and Medicare are earned benefits for American workers in their golden years. The only ones entitled in this country are those kids, those gosh dang Gen Zers and millennials. Get off my lawn.
844-967-2789. Not only could, as the Biden administration and Congress could raise the cap in which these things are taxed from $160,000, just take it away and have it be taxed up to whatever, they could also increase the amount of that tax.
Yeah.
Joe. For different income earners. My understanding, Biden is going to come out in his budget and suggest exactly doing that for those making more than over $400,000.
Right. And that's the issue. You could make it more progressive. There's a whole theory around like designing a tax system under a veil of ignorance, right? As if you didn't know how much money you would make or what type of profession you would be in when you grew up. And, you know, all that should be looked at. Here's what I will say. That's a, for to me, a tougher nut to crack and harder to get bipartisan support than it is to just lift the cap.
Because it's an actual raising of the tax.
Right. Because if you kept the tax rate where it is, but just had it apply to more raises, to more wages,
yeah.
I think you might get some of the conservative interest groups to, you know, at least take a pass on like trying to primary folks on the Republican side and say, oh, you signed Grover Norquist's tax pledge, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, so the interest group politics at play are a real factor.
Remember Grover Norquist? I mean, it was so quaint to think about, you know, how cute it was. You know, signed the Grover Norquist tax cut. Now we're talking about, you know, defending democracy and trying to overturn the will of the people. Those were just better days, Joe.
I've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, now, man. Yeah, man. 844-967-2789. Catherine from Madison, you're up. Welcome, Catherine. What do you got for us?
Hi. Really enjoying the show today. It's very, very interesting.
Thank you.
I love all the information on solar and so forth. But I was calling because it's almost a rhetorical question. I cannot understand why the Republicans or people that are into the finances don't understand that having good Social Security, Medicare, and a living wage stimulates the economy. I mean, they want to make money. You've got to put money into people in the lower income groups. And if people didn't have Social Security, just imagine what would be happening. I mean, it would cost us a lot of money in other ways. People ending up in emergency rooms, people homeless, you know, all that sort of thing. And if we would have Social Security start at 62, that you would also qualify for Medicare, a lot of jobs would open up, which would be really good, too. So because a lot of people end up working after 62 because they can't get Medicare.
Yeah. Well, I don't understand.
If you're in the money side of it, this will increase your profits if you do this. But they never want to.
Well, I don't think it's a rhetorical question. I think it's a very fair question with a very straightforward answer. And listen, I'm no economist, but I've talked to economists, and what they have convinced me of is that one of the most important macroeconomic factors in the world as we have made it here in the 21st century is the velocity of money. How quickly money is changing hands from one person or business to another, whether it's supply chain, whether it's goods for services, how fast money moves from one person's pocket to another makes all the difference in a healthy, vibrant, thriving economy. And that gets to what you thought was a rhetorical question. It's like, if you have $100 billion, a lot of that money is just sitting. There's no velocity to that money whatsoever. You want it moving around. And I think that's how maybe I'm going to mix metaphors here and play with the science, but like maybe that's how we reach escape velocity as an economy, is get more money moving around more quickly and doing things like to make sure working folks, retired folks on fixed incomes have a few more bucks in their pocket. That could be good from a macroeconomic standpoint.
I think certainly there are the hoarder types, but if you're, you know, accumulating that kind of money, and I'm sure there's a lot of people sitting on cash if you have that kind of money, but you're also investing that money, right? And maybe it's in something very conservative, T-bills, that's not going to move a whole lot, but if you invest in other stocks and corporations and startups and things like that, you can get returns above and beyond. Of course, there's greater risk with that, Joe, but that also gets to your point, the velocity. You know, if you're sitting on it, if you're hoarding it, like old newspapers and Time magazines.
That money ain't doing anything in the mattress.
It's not going to do anything. And if it's not working for you based on inflation, you're going to technically lose. If you're not going to spend it, if you're not going to use it, if you're going to invest it somehow, you end up losing on it because inflation every single year.
And that's what a lot of, like the Inflation Reduction Act, not to beat a dead horse and go back to it, but like, again, the provisions in that bill were designed to lower costs, right? Whether you're a diabetic on insulin on Medicare, now you've got more money. There's a great video from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, retiree from right here in Wisconsin, I think his name was Roy, talking about how it used to be like $220 a month for him on a fixed income to pay for his insulin. And he would frequently have to ration and like skip a few rounds. And then that could lead to other health complications. Now with the $35 a month cap, he's got that extra almost $200 a month. He can do things like provide a little money to his family. Right. So whether that's, you know, kids in college or high school, whether that's sons and daughters, know, they're spending that money. They're not saving it. And so, again, there's ways to get the money moving more quickly, and that's really good for the
overall
economy.
Yeah, but now the pharmaceutical company isn't going to make the kind of money that they were before, and then they're not going to be able to get that high profit and then do the stock buybacks.
They're
going
to have to get a mega yacht instead of a giga yacht.
I mean, if I can't get a helicopter pad on my boat, I don't even want one.
I've actually seen a photo of a giga yacht. Man, that's... Wow, I don't even know what else to say.
It's
that's
pretty
a real
obscene.
Thing. I didn't make that up. They did super yachts weren't enough. Mega yachts weren't enough. We have now entered the age.
If I can't get an
giga
old
yachts.
I want the first retired aircraft carrier is mine. Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. Go take some more of your calls with my friend Joe Zepecki from Zepecki Communications at 844-967-2789. We will be right back.
The Devil's Advocates, the fix for political junkies everywhere.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Hanging out with Joe Zepecki. You can join us on the lines at 844-967-2789. I do want to make sure we address and get to our Dan Kelly protest.
News of the day.
Yes, but let's take some callers before we get there. Dave from Mequon, you are next. Welcome, Dave. What do you got for us?
Hey, Dom. Hello, Joe.
Dave.
Quickly, I just wanted to chime in a little bit. And so, you know, in Canada, if you're a visitor in Canada and you get sick, the visitor actually has to pay for the hospital visits and or whatever clinics. My question to Joe is this. So I see what Gavin Newsom has done in California. I don't have a problem letting American citizens having access to medical care. Don't get me wrong. But when you have people who are not legally in this country or visitors and you start paying for all of them, that I think that crosses a line because you're now encouraging people to use the services that really should be used for people who actually live here that actually should be getting the treatments. Because if you look at what's going on in some of these border states, those hospitals are overrun because there's a lot of sick people that are coming across and you can't get medical attention. Like my aunt that lived in Arizona, she had to wait months to see because they're overwhelmed now with all these people from golly knows where. And so
Dave, I just want to be clear. Is it your assertion that your aunt could not get in to see her doctor because they were people who are not citizens of this country using the healthcare system?
Correct.
That's your position.
I think it's a fair question.
Okay, real quick, before we address that, Dave, if that condition, when we discussed it, if that's alleviated, would you then support a Medicare for All?
As a option where people could join, yes.
All right. Joe, what do you think about his point about those folks who are not necessarily citizens of this country, you know, using the system, getting free health care?
Yeah, I think it's a fair question. Nothing is free. It is all paid for. We talked in an earlier segment about the need for comprehensive immigration reform that allows people to come out of the shadows, pay taxes, right? There are lots of people in this country who are working and not paying their share of taxes because they're in the shadows. Comprehensive immigration reform that not only allows for pathways to citizenship for those who have been here and are playing by the rules and allow us to tax their income, maybe pay some back taxes. Like, they should have a pathway to citizenship. We should figure out a way to enhance legal immigration so that we grow the workforce, we grow the tax base, so that we are not in a position where we find ourselves delivering the most expensive care in the least efficient way, right? If you are living in the shadows, you do not go for your annual, well visit to
you
the doctor.
You wait for it to get
you
really bad
do
and then you go to the emergency
care.
Room.
Instead, you go to the emergency room. There is no place in America that is less efficient or you know, when it comes to delivering healthcare. So we've got to find a way to allow folks to opt in and be a part of the system that would actually lower costs for everybody in the aggregate, because we wouldn't be subsidizing so many emergency
which
risk
is essentially
costs.
What we do at this point at such a premium. I mean, a grotesque premium. 844-967-2789. Stephen from Green Bay, you're next. Welcome, Stephen. What do you got for us?
Hey, Dom.
Uh-oh, Stephen. Hang on. Let's try that again. Stephen from Green Bay, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, go ahead. You're breaking up for a moment. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I just said I have a question for Joe before I get to my main point. You really don't hate millennials and Gen Zers, do you? Well, I don't care about millennials.
I do not. I joke. I kid with love in my heart. In fact, my better half would have you believe I'm a millennial. I don't think so. I'm on, in the border generation between X and millennials, known as Xennials, that occurs between 1979 and 1983.
I think he's just making stuff up, Steven.
Okay, my inner millennial made me ask that question before I continued on with my main point. So here's my main point, especially about Medicare and, you know, what you guys were talking about. The country of Canada already has universal health care. Canadian, you have health care because you're Canadian. We're the biggest and supposed to be the best country in the world. I don't understand what the holdup is on this.
I'm going to cut you short there, Stephen. The line is breaking up. Well, what do you think? If I'm getting Stephen's question right here, Joel.
Why haven't we figured this out yet?
Why haven't we figured it out yet?
I'm going to go glass half full. Right now, there are more Americans, a higher percentage of Americans covered under health insurance plans than there ever has been before. That is due to things like the Affordable Care Act. That is due to things like the American Rescue Plan and the Inflation Reduction Act that have enhanced things like the advanced premium tax credits to make sure that if you purchase your plan through the Obamacare marketplace, you don't spend, it's either like 7.5% or 8.5% of your income, right? Like that's another step towards trying to figure out how do we make this fair and equitable for everybody.
Kind of box in some of the costs.
Yeah, like, right, if you're making $35,000 a year and 40% of your disposable income is going to healthcare, that's a problem. If it's 8.5% of your overall, that's a little different. So I think ultimately we're going to get there. Progress never happens fast enough. It never, you know, for enough people, but we're getting there. We're building. We've seen this within our lifetime. We've seen it even within the last 15 years. So we're going to get there. It's just hard.
And I think it was perhaps to Catherine's point before, if there is an option for a universal healthcare, or even as Gary or David, I believe, brought up, you know, something that you can opt into, you know, have something that would try to placate the different parties. But if you're if you're working, and a lot of people would work to keep their insurance, start a new business, do some entrepreneurial things, take risks, right? If they're going to lose their insurance.
It stifles innovation.
Absolutely does. And I think it's certainly if we were able to provide that, as again, nothing's free, and we pay into it, we provide it. We do it in so many ways and with so many people right now to a very successful end for the most part. I mean, anytime you get people in a room, things can go south. But generally speaking, we're able to deliver pretty decent health care. And the fact that we are the United States, the fact that, you know, we are the one country in this world where a lot of the pharmaceuticals, they charge us more than they do around the country, even though they're based here. They're here and they're charging us more because they can.
Right.
They can. If you need something to live, I call that a captured market, man.
Yep.
And you will give anything you possibly will to keep doing that, to stay alive. I'll give you it all.
You could charge more for a need to have than you can for a nice to have.
And some folks, they have no problem doing that,
yep,
Joe.
Doesn't mean you should.
Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. You should stick around. We're going to come back and talk about some of the national news. And I want to get, Joel, your perspective as a communications expert. What do you think about the whole Foxy Newsy thing going on? A lot to talk about. Make sure you stick around. You join us, 844-967-2789. The Happy Hour starts right now.
It was a weather balloon.